Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Rodcast. Today, I have a planning consultant extraordinaire, Lorenzo Pandolfi, the founder of Logic Planning, a boutique planning consultancy based in London.
Welcome to The Rodcast with Rod Turner, the show all about real estate. We discuss everything that affects asset-backed businesses, investments, and go deep into the details with some of the best in the business.
Welcome, Lorenzo. How are you?
Thank you, Rod. Thank you for having me. I'm very well.
So, Lorenzo, I've been wanting to get someone on to talk about the state of planning in the UK. Any person listening to this will be aware of the difficulties of the current planning system for developing property over the last couple of years. It seems to take even longer now for decisions to be made, more grey areas than ever before on coming to decisions. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think the problem is not in the machine, in the system itself, is of course in the people that run it. And there are, I think, two main school of thoughts. One is that planning is the issue blocking development. And the other, on the opposite side, is that planning, after all, is not such a major issue, because where there is profit, where there is, where there is a future for a development, both from a sustainability and a financial point of view, actually how hard it is to get planning shouldn't be a major stumbling block. Now, I sit in the middle, in the sense that there are certainly systemic issues, and that's where the focus of, I think, of any reformer government at regional or national level, or sorry, the region doesn't exist, unfortunately, national or local level should focus. But the main problem is morale, money, and amount of, let's say, perspective that you have when you work in the public sector. So public sector is where the proposals of developers and the needs and policies, which are essentially the result of democratically elected politicians and their thoughts, meet. So around the table, if your counterpart is not happy with the job he's doing, you're in trouble. So I think that's where the problem lies. I think there are three, from a more general point of view, the arbitrary nature to a degree of the system could be an issue. The second point is what I just said, and I think is the biggest one, is the staffing and motivational crisis of local planning authorities.
So,
and yeah, these are the two main ones.
So in terms of staffing then,
yeah,
what's causing that? Is it just that the money's not good enough to attract the right talent? Is it that budgets aren't big enough? Or is it that there's not enough people coming into the sector? Or are they all going off to private practice like yourself?
Yes.
What's happening?
There are three elements there. I think money is certainly one. Mm-hmm. The second one, especially when you're younger, money is an element, yes, because you have to pay the rent. But what's next is much more important.
So career progression.
Career progression. The thrill of going to the office and having something interesting and meaningful to do. So if I may, I'll just give you a brief resume of my career.
Perfect.
Where did I start? So I graduated in planning in Italy. I was always been very interested in the Anglo-Saxon culture, English, listening, to BBC Radio 4 when I was at uni, etc. But the bottom line is that I chose to come here to do my job, essentially, and in planning. And so I started doing, usual, you send CVs around. And funnily enough, I started my career in Brighton. I'm a big fan of Fatboy Slim, so it was a good
Brilliant.
Place to start. And so I started as a planning officer, as a junior planning officer. I learned the ropes there. It was a fantastic experience. I mean, really, the basics, going around, cycling up and down the hills of Brighton and Hove, looking at rear extension and et cetera. But the interesting part for me, which obviously my academic career, my studies were based on a different system, a system based on zoning, a system based on civil law, which is very, very different. So I started from scratch, and I focused on the legal point on the legal aspect of planning, which I think is something that everybody should always keep at the forefront of their plans. because at the end of the day, everything is negotiable. Mm-hmm. Everything can change from a side to another. And this is the beauty of it, I think, the common law, the fact that you have the right and the freedom to defend something every time and negotiate everything. I think is actually a fantastic feature of the system compared to others. Now, I say this because then starting looking at re-extension, visiting angry neighbors, etc., you start to think, essentially what I'm doing is I'm judging. I'm a little, very junior, inexperienced judge at the end of the day. And that's not, you know, it's a quite an important, it's quite a heavy burden on your shoulders if you think too much about it. So I kind of evolved from there. And in terms of why I think staffing is a big issue in the local planning authorities, for me, the change to the private sector was mostly about coming back to London and having a better pay. But I loved my experiences in public sector, Brighton. Then I moved to Merton, another fantastic experience. If I look back at it and I think, if they offer me the same pay, if they offer me the same variety, would I have moved to the private sector? I don't know, because the other thing, I think the big thing for younger people, as I say, it's variety, mm-hmm. the excitement of going to work. And if you're stuck always with the same policies, always in the same council, some people thrive in it, it's fine. But I think especially now, people need variety. So if you know, council can focus on giving that to their staff, I think they will be happy. This is not the major issue. Major issues, I'm with you, is money. Mm-hmm. Public sector to work properly needs to be funded properly. It's not a political argument to have, you know. It's an investment. Actually, I completely disagree to everybody saying, you know, the public sector is a burden. It's a Soviet era, everything. That's not the thing. Even in a highly functioning capitalist system, you have to have an equally functioning and quick counterpart, which is the public sector. Sure. You cannot avoid it because they are the ones saying yes or no to your development. Yeah.
So it's better, it doesn't matter how good you are, you still need someone to kind of respond to it.
Ideally, in any negotiation, both negotiations should have the same level. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So I will focus on that in terms of potential solutions. It seems that nobody wants to invest money in the public sector, which I don't think is the right thing to do. But we'll see. I mean, the change is in the air. We'll see what happens in the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what would you be doing to fix it? Is it just a case of then chucking some money at the public sector and saying, hey, let's do this to attract a bit more talent, really? Or what other things could you do?
I think there are a lot of very interesting initiatives already. Mm-hmm. I can name a few.
Yeah, please.
The most important, I think, and interesting is called Public Practice. They're doing a great job. Essentially, they are facilitating the entry of not only graduates, but planners of any seniority level into the public sector with a program of mentorship, with very sleek and interesting branding as well. They make it look sexy, which I think is another thing that unfortunately the planners tend not to do very well. I'm putting myself first. I mean, the kind of common thing is that it's quite a boring job and boring people. And actually, it's extremely interesting and could be very challenging. So that, I think that's another thing, working on the image of the planner as a job, as a craft. So that's one. There are a lot of, another thing that I think public sector should probably do better, and that's free. You can do it for free, is tell your story more. Mm. Go on social media more. Explain what's happening behind the scenes. You don't have to kind of share any secret or something that cannot be shared. I mean, it's just about narrating what's happening. Well, it's actually very interesting. There are people doing that.
And that's interesting because actually you don't hear, everyone is moaning.
And there are private sector moaners.
Yeah, everyone is moaning from the private sector about the public sector. And we never actually hear the public sector's point of view. I think there was one interview ages ago that came out from, I think I can't really remember what had happened, but they interviewed a few different people in the public sector who gave reasons for what's right. happening. I don't know if you, I think we've discussed it previously.
Yes.
Yes. About what's happening.
Well, and, absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned, I think, what should be compulsory reading for any person working in the real estate sector. It's called 50 Shades of Planning. It's a blog and a podcast. Probably no. it's okay. A completely different, starting point. So that there is no competition. It's an amazing source of information. And what they did, what he did, Sam Stafford, a few years ago now, he essentially did an open call to people working in the public sector, and he said, "Could you please share with me anonymously your first-hand experience of what it is?" How do you cope with this pressure that you have? What are the problems that you face every day? Staffing, financial, all of that. And I think, I don't know how many hundreds of responses came in. And he did a blog post on that. That's, I think, it's the best first-hand raw testimony of what's happening behind the scenes in certain councils.
So give us the highlights.
Again, it's about the numbers of application on the desk of a planning officer.
So the workload.
The fact that, well, especially after COVID, they work from home. It's very difficult to maintain social relationship when you're working from home. And when you need the support of senior people to make a judgment, again, going back, everybody's making a judgment. Mm. Even the junior planning officer is making a judgment. So you need people around you to make it properly. And then again, money all the time. I have to say also, it's quite distressing to read sometimes. You know, the amount of harassment sometimes then they face, it's it doesn't help. You know, the atmosphere is quite tense, and you know, you cannot work properly when you're faced with this pressure. I experienced it myself when I was a planning officer. You know, people ringing up and shouting at you because you approved an application, and when you approve it, or you didn't approve. Exactly.
There's always going to be one party that's absolutely unhappy. Yeah. Okay. Well.
And going back again to, sorry if I may rambling, but going back to the point about making judgments. To make proper judgments, you also need time. And when you have 100 files on your desk, it's difficult to assess them properly. I always remember this. When I was a junior planning officer at Brighton, I was quite quick actually in dealing with minor applications. You know, you just have to check PD rights, whether they comply or not. But in one occasion, there was a householder application for a rear extension, pretty basic. But, you know, I checked it and I discovered that on the face of it, they didn't comply with the planning guidance. Fine, but I thought I think in this case I should look a bit further. I did, and I found a comparable few doors away in the same terrace. This is something you do as a private sector consultant all the time. You check for comparables. I did it when I was in the public sector. I wanted to see what happened next door. And in that case, the council refused the application. They went to appeal. They lost the appeal. And so I thought to myself, should I recommend the refusal here or not? Because if it gets refused and then overturned at the appeal, it's a waste of resources for us, the council. So I wrote my report, recommendation for refusal, you know, sticking to the word of the SPD. But I added a note to my managers and said, look, guys, I found this. Personally, I will refuse it. I wrote the report. I will approve it. I wrote the report for a refusal. What do you think? It took a little bit, but gradually they kind of agreed with me and we approved it. But again, you cannot do that if you don't have time, if you don't have staff, etc. So it all goes back to the quality of decision you make. But again, that was for me an example of when the beauty of flexibility in the planning system in its full.
It's tricky. It sounds like it's not something that's going to be fixed anytime soon.
No.
So what are some things that we as developers or from the private sector then, what can we do to help ensure we're getting the most out of planning where we've got a system that is a bit broken?
Tricky, yeah. Focus on the basics, I think, is the first thing. I find still that some actors, some players in the real estate game, they think they can get away with less reports or the approach is, let's try to give it a go and see how it goes. It is increasingly difficult to adopt that mindset now because, not only people don't have time, but also the amount of regulations and laws is increasing. There are many more layers than there were before. So you don't have, unfortunately, the luxury of skipping on paperwork anymore. So I will stick to that, to the letter of the validation checklist when necessary. Obviously, I'm not here to advocate for more useless reports, but think twice before skipping one. Mm. Because again, your counterpart will work better if you give them the right material.
Sure, and it sounds like they're very much a tick box exercise because they don't have time to go into it like with your example.
Yes.
So if you can make sure that they are ticking everything that needs to be ticked,
yes,
it's not going to hold things up.
Absolutely, that's one. I will focus on the laws actually more than on policy. I mean, policy changes all the time. It's flexible, mm-hmm. Its nature is flexible. So kind of trying to solidify it is not easy. But so you always have an angle there to negotiate and to improve your chances using policy. However, you cannot negotiate, you cannot discuss the letter of the law. So now with the new laws coming into force, for example, building regulations, fire safety, biodiversity net gain, they are very complex areas of laws. Professional community is going berserk because some of them are very difficult to grasp, even for very experienced people. I'm talking about building inspectors with years of experience. I mean,
yeah,
they're struggling to understand, the building regs, especially the fire bit. But so that's where the focus, I think, should be. Let's get right the difficult ones first and then focus on the others. So try to be as solid and comprehensive as you could on those topics when you submit a planning application or where you discuss with your team.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've kind of mentioned policy there. Obviously, at the moment, we're seeing all these policy changes. You've got people like Michael Gove can't seem to decide on what planning policy should be in or out and flip-flopping amongst them. It seems every week we've got new potential legislation changes in terms of planning. What are the ones that developers and investors should be focused on in terms of your view? You mentioned kind of the
biodiversity and net gain.
Yeah, net gain.
Yes.
And is that something that we should be focused on now, or is it, or are there others?
No, I reiterate my advice is for developers of any size is to focus on more than policy. Focus on the laws, mm-hmm. which are either have been implemented recently or are about to be implemented. Biodiversity and again, certainly, yes. You need to have strong ecologists on the other hand of the phone, almost for every typology of project, apart from super small ones.
Yeah.
So that's a given. Fire safety, it is, and I think will continue to be on the top of the agenda for politicians because, the scandal of the Grenfell fire, the tragedy of the Grenfell fire, it won't go away and it shouldn't go away, in my opinion. So, but then, of course, that means that there is maybe even too much focus on certain areas that a few years ago were negotiable within reason.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're seeing, is it, I've forgotten the term now, but with kind of different heights of buildings now,
yes,
with fire safety,
yes.
You've got, so if you might have a block of flats, say, that's a Victorian block of flats, but if it's got six stories,
yes,
suddenly
it's super tricky to convert.
It's got the same issues as a new build, and it's causing all sorts of issues. And like you said, people are really struggling to work out what the rules actually mean.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, and again, it's not, technically speaking, it's not a planning matter. I mean, it is when you arrive at a certain threshold, but it is a building control, it is an engineering and architectural matter. However, as a planning consultant, my advice is try to have somebody on your team that can tackle those issues.
Yeah.
It's not easy because, as you say, I mean, I share a space with two architecture firms and they're running around with the RBA guidance on building regs and what is a principal designer. who I'm going to call when I have doubts. You cannot put an approved inspector in the mix as in the past. What is a principal designer? So there are many things that are still up in the air, and confusion obviously doesn't help. So I will focus rather, as I say, rather focus on law than policy. Now the crazy bit, I think, is that in some areas there is too much regulation, and in some other areas there is no regulation at all. For example, there is no enforceable system to ensure planning applications are decided on time. Of course, I mean there isn't any fine for councils if they don't decide your application on time. They always try to kick the can down the road with the extension of time. But you know, some people may think, well, I'd rather have my decision on time, even if it's a negative one, than not having the decision, negotiating an extension of time, and then still not knowing what's happened to my application. I have very recent experience. This developer in the south of England, they submitted an application for an extension to a commercial building, putting 9 flats on top of it. And it was submitted, I think, in May. Radio silence for 6 months, and then they call and say, "Can you try to get something out of the council in terms of even a feedback, something?" And they came back and they didn't like it. They wanted to refuse it for heritage reasons. Now we went back with amended drawings. Now a bit of exchange. I wouldn't go into detail, but essentially they agreed to the changes, reduction of one story against something that some councils don't even contemplate. They did, because I think probably they felt not guilty. But you know, after 7 months of radio silence, it's fair,
yeah,
for me to try at least respond to your criticism. So now they're going to determine it on that basis. But why would you keep stum for 6 months? I mean, there is no reason to do that. And as I say, there is no fine.
Exactly. There's nothing to you can go back on. Now, there were these talks about paying money to get things in. Now, what's happening with that?
You can increase the fees, etc., etc. But if you don't reply to very basic emails, what's the incentive there? It's just common sense. It's, I think, politeness. The other area where I think the regulations are not strong and pretty random, actually, is the problem of housing targets. And I mean, there have been many iterations of Boris Johnson called it the mutant algorithm. It's not that complex. It's less complex than that, but it's still quite tricky to grasp. Anyway, the bottom line there is that there are a lot of carrots for councils, but the stick is either broken or made of, foam.
Yeah.
Because meeting housing targets, it's a duty from my point of view, not only on your electorate, but also on society as a whole. I mean, you know, providing housing is super important. Now, again, there is a school of thought saying housing targets, they don't really have a dent on housing delivery, because at the end of the day, again, developers, if they have a good margin, they're going to build with or without target. But that's not the point. The point is having something in place that doesn't allow council to escape from the fact that they're not building enough.
Mm.
Something that that gives something back to the society, in terms of providing housing for the more vulnerable, etc. Again, if you don't have a stick, people will just do what they want. In fact, there've been endless articles on planning media, but media in general, about councils giving up on plan making, council kicking down the can down the road.
Where examples of Michael Gove sending them letters saying, if you don't do this, I will, or stepping
that's
in?
That's crazy, because then, yes, I don't know. I mean, I haven't made up my mind yet on the political spectrum in England yet. But in general terms, it looks like this particular government is, from one side, is trying to appealing to NIMBYs and local councils that they don't want to lose their seat because they gave approval for housing development, which I think is a crazy position to be in, because again, you're providing housing to people that may vote for you. But anyway, on one hand, you try to do this, so you remove targets and you make it difficult for developers to build. On the other hand, you're kind of punishing, I think quite rightly, super underperforming councils.
Mm.
I think should be a bit more balanced there and focus on, there is no need for extremes. You just need to have a simple and legible and system to ensure that there is a target, and you try as much as you could to follow that. You don't need to meet it every time. I mean, but at least the direction of travel is clear, and you're encouraged to do that. And I think that's still lacking. And I'm sure it is already a very very high in the political agenda of both parties for the next election. I'm curious to see what will happen.
Well, I guess half the problem is the political outlook is only 4 years, isn't it? Before there's the next general election, so people are very unwilling to do anything which has got a longer term outlook than that, that may hurt them in the earlier part of those years, because politically it may look, they might think, well, actually our voters might bear the brunt of this short term for the longer term greater gain.
Yes.
And it's a difficult thing for politicians who run on four-year cycles to agree with. I mean, that's the cynical point of view, I guess.
Yeah. And the third, last, I think there are many others, but another point, for example, big topic is green belt. That in many cases is not green and is not a belt. I think several of your guests in the past talked about this. Again, a lot of talk, but there is no clear policy and or law distinguishing between what is actually valued green belt and what is not. Mm-hmm. And it's something that the Labour Party has now kind of starting to look into it and talking about grey belts, which is, I think, interesting.
Well, that's a good, a positive, I guess, because as long as we've got sort of defined rules in which to play.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. And you mentioned the ones that are over-regulated. What would be some examples of that?
Well, nutrient neutrality, I think, is a red herring the size of a whale, because the bottom line is very simple, but it's not something that I will use my Italian bluntness card here. The problem with nutrient neutrality is 80% or more, I think, a problem created by agriculture. Real estate sector has nothing to do with the amount of chemicals that end up in protected areas. So, and the other, well, that's the source, which in itself, okay, it's a problem. But then the second and probably the biggest problem is the filter. The filters are the water companies, which have appalling levels of maintenance in their kits and in their water treatment system. So that's something that has, there is a study from Lichfields and the Housing Building Federation that we're talking about, I think 100,000 homes stuck in the system because of nutrient neutrality.
Crazy.
Hopefully, I mean,
it sounds like that's being reversed at the moment.
They're working on it, a lot of people and a lot of council. But again, it was for a moment quite a difficult position to be in. I had an application in Canterbury where we were stuck by this, and fortunately, we find a solution. Probably one of the first in Kent. But the again, a situation where it's not anybody's fault. It's just the fact that suddenly, from one day to the other, you have a big stumbling block on your path to the planning permission, and you cannot do much really about it.
What one thing at the moment that developers are focusing on is PD rights, because they're thinking, well, rather than me get lost in this whole planning system, let's go for something where there are more clear rules, let's say, in terms of what needs to be met in order to get something through permitted development.
Yes.
Do you think that's the right way to look at it? Wrong way? I mean, what are your thoughts in terms of PD?
The PD rights are a very important and useful tool in the toolkit of a developer. There is a sting in some of them. For example, the recently in 2020, the PD rights about the additional stories, extremely interesting on paper, but then the council could still criticize you from a design point of view, on a townscape point of view, which is completely
essentially
open.
Planning.
It's essentially
it?
Planning yeah, it again. Yeah. But no, I'm pretty positive about PD rights and the fact that they have improved, for example, the point about space standards and become mandatory. That I think removed one of probably the biggest bad element that for the bad press on the earliest.
Rabbit hutches.
So I think it's still a good tool. Changing, they say they're going to extend it further, is another one of those topics that until it's done. But no, I'm a big fan.
Brilliant. Okay, we're just going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Sorry to interrupt this fantastic episode, but I just wanted to share some really exciting news with you. After a long time of wanting to be involved in a financial services business, I'm very pleased to say that myself and regular guest on the Rodcast, Adam Lawrence, have bought into 978 Finance. We are a directly authorised FCA-regulated mortgage broker who specialises in buy-to-let mortgages, commercial mortgages, and bridging and development loans. I've been very passionate about finance for a long time and have been part of financing a lot of very complex deals, as well as your typical buy-to-let and commercial mortgages. 978 Finance focuses on the customer journey and embodies the pragmatic, solution-orientated finance for each case that I absolutely love. It's got some very, very difficult financing deals over the line for me, and now I'm really pleased to be part of the business. So if you do have any new mortgages, refinances, bridging or development needs, please do get in touch with us. You can either contact myself or you can email simon@978finance.com and we will make sure you're looked after. Let's get back to the show.
So Lorenzo, what would you say the main risks are to developers when it comes to planning, and what can they do to mitigate that?
I will not go into technical elements here. I mean, obviously you need to understand policy, be able to use policy at your advantage, respecting the other party, etc. And you have to know the law. I will probably focus more on general topics, probably like for example, having the right team. Again, very easy for developers of any size to try to cut there as much as you could, especially in a situation where, as of now, there are financial pressures from all angles, as you know perfectly well. So you try, it's the right thing to do, try to cut costs, etc. But in terms of, again, given that you're facing not a broken but a tricky planning system, given that you're facing your counterparties, it could be difficult to deal with. At least you have to do the utmost to have all the things covered on your side. It's not a matter necessarily of costs. I mean, you can find very good consultants or architects, etc., at reasonable prices. But having all the things covered, again, because when you put that planning application on the table, you want to be in a position to say, I did my best, I covered everything, I disagree with the council on this, so I know that may be a risk, but I did my homework.
Yeah,
that's certainly the first. And the second one is about respecting your counterpart. Again, it's very easy to be carried away by nervousness, by anger as well, when you deal with local councils. It's human. But you know, keeping your head cool, frozen, I will say, is the best thing. Always, always respectful. Always try to, as you say, help them essentially. The idea, again, a little story. When I was at Merton, I was about to move to the public sector. I told it to one colleague and he said, you're switching to the dark side. And I thought, no, I don't think so. I never had that thing as we and them, yeah. You know, it's the wall. It's better if you try to remove that wall as much as you could. There is a wall, of course. You have different objectives and different... your objectives do not necessarily align, but trying to continue to talk to each other and respect each other is super important, backed by strong technical policy and legal arguments. And I think the third one, which is linked to the second, I started my career when probably that mindset was still floating around, the mindset of I try with two or three reports less than necessary. I'll try to sweep this issue under the carpet and hope that they don't notice it. I don't think that doesn't work anymore and shouldn't work anyway. But you know, again, we are all grown ups, and sometimes you have to do a bit more, be a bit more cynical. But it won't work. Mm. It doesn't work because again, you have so many layers. And the other big problem is not only planners themselves, the planning officers themselves, they are not the end point. They consult with third parties. So many eyes are on your documents. And they will make a judgment. They can also disregard the advice of their own consultees. But if you forgot or willfully forget to analyze properly a certain topic, I think probably sooner or later they're going to find you. And so better to cover everything and focus on that. Yeah.
Fantastic. So in relation to one of those points then, how important do you think soft skills are when it comes to planning applications? And what tips would you give developers trying to navigate the world of planning in that regard?
I think in general, soft skills are the most important topic in any discussion between you know people, and more so in the business environment. It's about making the other part comfortable to talk to you. I think first and foremost, patience. I know it's trite. It's a virtue that you know, but patience.
It's hard when you're waiting months and months for a response.
Of course. Well, we worked on several projects together. We know. I know where you come from, and I agree. I think not patience in the sense of waiting endlessly.
Yeah, of course.
More about waiting. More. You know, giving the opportunity to other to tell you what they think, and if they don't reply immediately, of course you have to be there and try to push them, try never to become nervous, etc. And not only with planning officers, with your collaborators, with the team, mm-hmm. try to be patient. And going back to what I said before, you are in the same team. My idea is to think about everybody around the table. It's one team. We have almost the same objective, really, which is approving something which
is going to leave a greater dent on the community
exactly.
than what it started.
Depending
with.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's at the end of the goal theoretically is the same. So try to be patient and assertive as well mm-hmm. at the same time. When it's time to fight, you have to fight. But mm-hmm. try to balance the two. Now the second one, soft skill, I think is try to make life easier for stakeholders. Our culture, contemporary culture, the top goal scorers are celebrated. You always educated to score more goals, to be the Ronaldo, the Messi of the game. Actually giving assists in the long term pays a lot of dividends. If you let other people score, they mm-hmm. will remember you. They will help you and they will think, this guy or this gal helped me. And I'm grateful. I may need to refuse our application, but in a working relationship, the world of development is pretty small. You may end up meeting again. And the fact that you help them, again, it depends on the time you have, the resources you have. I'm not saying you have to write the report for them, but actually sometimes it happens. Yeah, there are situations where planning officers are perfectly happy not to copy and paste, but almost to copy and paste something that you've written because it is good. And
it covers, you know, all the points.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you have time, when you see that the planning officer is confused, try to clarify. Give them assist, explain what's a bit fuzzy for them, etc. That's another big point. And remove obstacles. So mm-hmm. trying to remove obstacles for them. It may or may not result in an approval, but again, it certainly help in building a good relationship, which is always a positive outcome. In terms of it, this is more not soft skills, but what you put in the project. Now, this is a big question for all developers. You try to maximize profit, you try to build beautiful houses and space and interiors. But what is this secret ingredient that you can put in the project that will make local politician tick or will help the local community? It doesn't need to be big. Mm-hmm. It's about the magnitude of your project. Are you focused inwardly in your project alone? Or you're saying, well, this is my project. I need to do this and this and this to make it work from a numbers point of view. But I think I can address space for this. It could be a space within the building. It could be an offer you put. It could be something that you resolve in the area. That's super important. Even for very small schemes, bigger the scheme, and usually the bigger the canvas you have.
Sure.
So it's easier there to put something that is good for the community and balance it out with something else that, you know, covers the cost. But also it's almost automatic. The bigger the project, the higher the political stakes, which means that in reality you have more space for negotiation because the other party is interested in having a good outcome. So, for example, I find myself in a situation where I negotiate much easily extensions of time and amendments to schemes which are bigger than smaller ones, because in the smaller ones, you don't have much room to maneuver. But again, if you try to do something that raises the political stakes, again, this is sorry for the little diversion, but we should always remember, even the smallest planning application for a 3 meters rear extension, it's the expression of policy, of politics. It looks like it's about dimensions, aesthetics. Yes, these are the parameters, but the source is always political. So if you try to understand what's in the black box of that particular council, what are the issues locally, where you can gain support from the local community, it'll go a long way in getting approval. There are situations which counterintuitively, if you resolve something which is clearly an issue for the local community, but the local politicians don't want or cannot solve, because there are situations where obviously everybody's happy to cut the ribbon in a new hospital, etc. There are other issues that are equally important that people maybe don't want to look too much, and politicians maybe don't, they is not on their agenda at that moment. But if you go there and you solve it anyway, for example, a school, there are very interesting examples, special needs school, or care homes are for some reason quite disruptive now, but actually they are fantastic pieces of new housing infrastructure. But bottom line, what I'm saying is that if you resolve something, notwithstanding the local opposition, even if you get a refusal at local level, you go in front of an inspector. I'm a big fan of the planning inspector because they tend to be very good judges. But then whatever, you arrive there and he will see or she will see that you've done something that is good for the community, and it will help you getting an approval. So try to resolve issues. Then the last one, but I already covered it a little bit, but again, try not to ignore advice you don't want to hear. I know it could be hard, but there are situations where, being stubborn actually in the long term costs you more money than conceding a bit more immediately. Again, it's a bit time. You teach me this, Rod. I mean, it's not money is one element. Timing is probably even more important. So without losing your profit, without going in the red. But if there is an area where you can negotiate with the council and score some points for them, it's better to do it sooner rather than later, because you may win at appeal. Yes, sure. But
can you cope with the time lag to get there? Yeah, fantastic. So Lorenzo, are there any resources for developers that you would recommend if people listening want to kind of dig deeper into the whole planning system?
Yes. I will tune in the We Got Planning News for You. It's a YouTube channel. It's fantastic. It's hosted by the top barristers in the country. And every time they have very high profile guests from the private and public sector, public officials, civil servants, planning officers. One of them, Stacey Robbins, is one of those rare public sector planners that have a very strong and voice on social media, and he is very good at telling what's happening there, etc. And then in terms of, for example, blogs, well, there are three that are, I think, must read. Simonicity from Simon Ricketts, Town Legal, I would say is the Gandalf of planning law, without the bird and the hat, but is up there. And everything he writes is super sleek and deep. Then we have Zach Simon's PlannerX, another great blog. Is a barrister. Very fresh, the way he approaches very complex legal issues, and very readable. And then I would say Nicola Gooch. She's a solicitor, and she has a kind of her take on, again, planning news, changes in legislation. Again, super readable and on point. So they can be a bit geeky, of course, because it's
well, quite anything specific. That's specific on the subject.
It's super readable, and you can gain a lot of insight. And then, as I said at the beginning, the last one, 50 Shades of Planning, especially that article. That article, yeah. I think, should go on the curriculum of also university degrees. You know, what's happening behind the scenes in the public sector.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure we have links to all of those in the show notes. Lorenzo, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure as always, and look forward to hopefully having you on again in the future.
Thank you, Rod. Thank you for having me.